This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Of the seven deadly sins, is gluttony the most inconsequential? We all need to eat, after all, and on some occasions, tomorrow perhaps, many of us will eat quite well without feeling any religious guilt whatsoever. Now, of course, there could be many feelings of secular guilt going around by the end of the weekend. Gluttony has morphed from a religious no-no to a social one, at least for most people. Do you think of gluttony as secular or sinful? Do you think of a gluttonous experience that you might just be a little bit ashamed of, or maybe you're a defender of gluttony? Give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Francine Prose has been gorging herself on the topic of gluttony for a book of the same name, part of a series on the seven deadly sins that's issued by the New York Public Library and Oxford University Press. And Francine Prose joins us from our bureau in New York, and it's very good of you to come in today.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here.
So how did, we do have to eat after all. How did gluttony become a sin?
Well, really the early church fathers were the first to decide that it was a sin. Of course, I mean, the Greeks and the Romans knew that there was a certain problem with conspicuous consumption and overeating. I mean, there's that great scene in the Satyricon, the insane Trimalchio's feast with all the courses coming out. But it wasn't until Gregory the Great and then, of course, St. Augustine and Thomas Aquinas that people began to think it's actually a kind of spiritual matter rather than just an aesthetic one, that it's a sin against God.
Well, the Romans kind of cut both ways on this. You mentioned the scene of the Satyricon. Of course, we all remember the vomitorium, the fifth grader's favorite Roman scene. But the Bible seems to cut both ways on this, too.
Well, yeah, but in fact, there are feasts all the way through the Bible that are meant to celebrate things and that do celebrate things. And when Christ did the miracle of the loaves and fishes, there wasn't anyone there saying, don't eat too much of the bread and the fish.
And didn't he at one point say, nothing you put in your mouth is defiled?
Well, that's right. I mean, it wasn't until later, of course, that the church fathers came along and said, first of all, it's not so much what you eat, but how much you think about it. Mm. I mean, that is, gluttony is a sin because it distracts you from thinking about God, which is what you should be thinking about. And then it's also a sin. It was kind of a gateway sin. I mean, that is, gluttony. I mean, now we think of it mainly as overeating, but of course, drinking used to be considered gluttonous too. So once you ate and drank too much, then all the other sins were likely to follow, lust, sloth, anger, and so forth.
In an interesting way, you compare a gluttony to what you describe as its sister, lust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, both are about the body, and both actually are, in a certain sense, necessary for the species to just survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to do both.
You've got to do both.
Envy, anger, those other things, presumably they're dispensable.
Yeah, we could more easily do without them.
I see. Now, you have a personal story you tell in the book about gluttony. Tell us the story of the beer and the oysters.
Well, this was, I was really kind of searching for my own most hideous and embarrassing experience with gluttony. And what I was thinking about was how it's kind of a matter of social control. I mean, that is, it became a sin partly during the monastic times when, you didn't want brother blah blah eating more than his portion of the meal at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about I'd gone to a poetry reading at the loft of a very famous sculptor. And it was a very long reading, and most of the poems were about how great the sculptor was. And afterwards, they said, okay, everybody come downstairs, we're going to have beer and oysters. And my husband and I and a friend of ours went downstairs, and there were these two tubs of what was certainly beer and what seemed to be oysters on ice. So we thought, okay, we'll do just kind of the polite thing. We'll have a beer, and then we'll go to the table, and we'll each have a dozen oysters. I mean, a week before we'd gone to a wedding at which there was unlimited oysters. We'll each have a dozen oysters and then kind of leave and let everybody else have oysters. So I had a dozen, and my husband had a dozen, and a friend had a dozen. And then we heard someone say, they've eaten all the oysters. So we just kind of left the party immediately.
As you describe it, like Adam and Eve fleeing Eden.
Slinking out of the garden, yeah.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. Sean is on the line with us from Townsend, Vermont.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I was just calling. I'm a chef, and I'm prepping for tomorrow. And I was telling your lady who picked up the phone that you know, gluttony is one of the sins that you really look forward to. You know, one time a year you can just do it. And, you know, in this day and age of, you know, everyone's reformed this or that, I think it's the eating communally is about the only thing that people do together anymore.
We'll leave lust out of this equation.
Well, considering, you know, AIDS and you know, people seem to be a little more conservative.
Is it a socially acceptable vice, Francine Prose?
Well, first of all, let me just say I have just endless sympathy for gluttony. I mean, when Oxford University Press called me up and said, we're doing the seven deadly sins, which do you want to do? I didn't even have to think. I mean, I knew gluttony, you know, it was the one that seemed least like a sin to me at all. I don't think that we really think of it so much anymore as a kind of, you know, as a divine and spiritual sin. Although later, after I'd finished the book, I kind of wish that I'd gone and interviewed priests and ministers to talk about how many people actually came to confession and said, I ate too much last night, I've committed a sin. I don't think very many, actually. But now it's become something else. I mean, now it's become a sort of health concern and an aesthetic concern and a dietary. And now that we all know that if we eat moderately, we're going to live forever.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, but, you know, with you know, other things such as alcohol or drugs or something, the effect you get is kind of instant. And like, if you drink too much, you're going to get drunk, and then the day after you're going to feel really bad. Whereas you eat too much, you might feel bad, but at least maybe it's just me. You feel bad in a good way because you know it's something that, you know, the cook, you know, via the chef or the mother or whomever, you know, takes a lot of love and care to prepare what they're doing.
Well, Sean, you described yourself as a chef, so do you have a monetary interest in gluttony?
Well, of course. I have a restaurant.
Well, are you going to be busy tomorrow? I assume you will.
Yes, sir. I'm feeding about 80 of our closest friends.
Okay, well, have a great time, and I hope they do, too.
Yes, and please, you know, gluttony is not a sin.
Okay. Thanks, Sean, very much. Francine, one of the things you write about was that in the medieval times, you know, eating was much more seasonal then, and people sort of looked ahead to an orgy of food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were these kind of three-day binges that people went on at harvest time and so forth. And, you know, the great Bruegel painting of the glutton sleeping it off. It really had to do a lot more with kind of feast and famine and plenty and lack of food.
You have a poster from your own dining room to illustrate attitudes of the Middle Ages.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't even realized that I had it until I started. I mean, I knew I had it, but I didn't, I hadn't thought about the connection. It's a poster of a fresco from the cathedral in San Gimignano in Tuscany. And it's a painting of the gluttons in hell. And, it, you know, of course, there are many representations of what happened to the gluttons in the other life. During the Middle Ages, and this is a particularly gruesome one. I mean, they're all kind of naked. They look like, well, they're all sort of overweight even after death. They look like they have been gluttons, and they've got their hands pinned behind their backs by demons, and on the table is this kind of lonely-looking chicken and some bottles of wine, and actually, it looks a little like a Thanksgiving dinner now that I think about it, but it's not doing the dead gluttons any good.
And what does it say beneath that picture?
It says, it's not a sin to eat well in San Gimignano.
Kind of undercuts the message now, does it?
Why else is it over my dining room table?
We're speaking with Francine Prose. Her new book is The Seven Deadly Sins series. Her entry, gluttony. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email we got from Joshua Karp. I have always considered that while gluttony is not wrong, it possesses a negative connotation in society. People today tend to look at obesity not as a religious sin, but as a social taboo. People who are obese are often shunned from society and attract stares and snide comments when seen.
Yeah, that's completely right. And in fact, there have been, you know, even worse things. I think for a while, Southwest Airlines was considering forcing overweight people to buy two seats on the airline, which seemed to me just horribly punitive. I mean, one of the things that to me was most interesting when I was writing the book that I didn't really understand before was how much money our culture is making off both ends of gluttony, so to speak. I mean, that is, you know, the fast food industry pumps out this incredibly fattening, unhealthful diet which makes people fat. And then the reducing industry, you know, Weight Watchers and Jenny Craig, make a fortune helping people take it off. So it's kind of a win-win situation for capitalism.
And you look at the headlines, and you could easily believe that half the country's obese and the other half is anorexic.
That's right. And, you know, God forbid a star gains a few pounds and everyone notices. And you know, then it's just like the sort of Roman circus.
Well, the Roman circus you describe is that of Carney Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can still see it, but even when I was writing the book, you could watch her, the sort of most grotesque, you could watch her getting her stomach stapled in live streaming video. And then on this website, she would also, you could buy many diet products that would help you, you know, redeem yourself the way Carney had after her operation.
Bruegel, his imagination didn't cover that.
No, but he would have gotten it right away. I think he would have seen, you know, he would have just loved to have seen that streaming video.
Let's go back to the phones. Terry's with us from Cedar Springs in Michigan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I was just going to say that a lot of times gluttony is something that you look forward to almost as a reward. My own personal experience was probably like a lot of brides trying to fit into that wedding dress. And then the 7-day cruise following, being able to just eat whatever you wanted to.
So,
and I came home personally having gained 7 pounds, so I know how that goes.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. It was heaven.
Francine Prose, that's a key element that you raise again and again in your book, that somehow the enjoyment factor is often left out of this.
Well, eating is a pleasure. There's no doubt about it. I mean, unlike many of the other sins, I think envy and anger and pride and so forth don't really make you very happy, but eating is just great, which is one of the reasons that I think the Church Fathers found it so hard to condemn. Really, I mean, you know, in many of their writings, you see a kind of double attitude. Even St. Augustine said something like, you know, full feasting sometime creepeth upon your servant, Lord. I mean, he knew what it was like. And Thomas Aquinas was legendarily overweight. So, you know, and through literature, there are all these kind of marvelous celebrations of gluttony. M.F.K. Fisher wrote one of the most beautiful ones. And, you know, there's that famous eating scene in Tom Jones. And it was certainly easier to find big eating scenes than condemnations of gluttony.
And you also describe, of course, the famous Diamond Jim Brady and his festivals of eating at places like Delmonico's.
Yeah, well, I can't remember how many inches, but the legend is that he used to sit a certain number of inches away from the table, maybe 6 inches, and then when his stomach started rubbing uncomfortably against the edge of the table, he knew it was time to quit eating.
Terry, I suspect that no matter how much fun you had, it wasn't that bad.
It really wasn't.
Thanks very much for the call, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, you too.
Let's get another caller on the line and go with Doug. Doug is on the line with us from Prince George's County in Virginia.
Yes. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I just wanted to make the brief comment that I think if we're going to look at gluttony within a religious or a theological context or in really any other context, it would be maybe beneficial for us to look at it less about how much we eat and more about it being taking more than we need. I mean, there's a limited amount of resources in the world, and we buy bigger cars and bigger houses, and we consume more things than we need, especially in America. And perhaps if we could learn to not be gluttons in all aspects of our lives, then it would make more resources available for other people. And I'll just take your comments off the air. I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Doug. We appreciate it.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think gasoline should replace food and drink as the thing, as the source of gluttony. And SUVs should be, you know, again, sort of condemned as the big gluttons out there.
And Francine Prose, in her book Gluttony, repeats a phrase over and over again. She begins the book with it. The definition of gluttony by Gregory the Great: too soon, too delicately, too expensively, too greedily, too much. And we're going to have to leave you wanting more, okay? It's a lovely little book, Francine Prose. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Francine Prose's book is Gluttony. It's published by the Oxford University Press and the New York Public Library. It's part of their series on the 7 deadly sins. I guess we'll be back with lust right around St. Valentine's Day. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.